Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the antidote to the just-published celebration of the wealthiest Americans, the Forbes 400 list, and speak with Shannon Moriarty, the Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy. They just published the Born on Third Base report, which demonstrates how many of the billionaires that a lot of average Americans aspire to join inherited their wealth. Then, following Mitt Romney's categorization of 47% of Americans as victims, we will explore the psychology of reverse victimization, where many rich conservatives see themselves as victims of higher taxes that support freeloaders and a liberal mainstream media that does not appreciate their value. Robert Samuels, the president of the University Council, joins us. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Romney's Victim Identification: What Really Drives Right-Wing Politics. Then finally, we will discuss the so-called one-state solution between Israel and Palestine with two authors who will be speaking at a forum, What Happens After Zionism? Marcy Newman, the author of The Politics of Teaching Palestine to Americans, joins us, along with Anthony Lowenstein, the author of a new anthology, After Zionism, One State for Israel and Palestine. They will discuss their ideas for a new way forward in the stalled so-called peace process. And joining us now is Shannon Moriarty, who's the Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, a non-profit public interest organization that raises awareness of how concentrated wealth and power undermines our economy, corrupts democracy, and deepens the racial divide, tearing communities apart. They have just released a report in response to this week's publication of the Forbes 400 list of the richest Americans, the Born on Third Base report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Shannon Moriarty.
Thank you.
And the Forbes 400, the latest report that just came out this week, shows an extraordinary change from when they first started doing this report back in 1982. To get into the 400 list, you needed only $75 million in net worth. Today, to get in at the entry level, at the 400 level, is $1.1 billion. And when they first started out, the 400 Club's total net worth was $93 billion. Today, the combined net worth of the 400 richest Americans is $1.7 trillion. So that's an extraordinary change to where the average net worth of a Forbes 400 member today is a staggering $4.2 billion.
It is, and that's precisely why we did this report. We really feel that the Forbes 400 list glamorizes wealth in America, when in fact it's never become more difficult for the average person to become a member of this exclusive 400 club. So what we did with this report was we just took a look at what it actually takes to become a member of the Forbes 400. They call it the definitive scorecard of wealth in America, but really it only focuses on the minuscule minority and not the realities of what it takes to play the game.
So the top three, of course, are Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Larry Ellison of Oracle. The first two, Gates and Buffett, do give a lot of their fortune away. But what I've learned from your report, Shannon Moriarty, Born on Third Base, is that many of these people on this list of Forbes 400 richest Americans inherited their wealth, and they spend most of their time trying to figure out ways to avoid paying taxes. There seems to be an enormous decline in altruism in this country.
Indeed. I mean, there's no doubt that a lot of this year, for the 2012 list, Forbes focused their narrative on the charitable giving that many of the members of the Forbes 400 do. And that's wonderful, and that should certainly happen. But the purpose of our report was to point out that about 40% of the 2011 Forbes members inherited a sizable asset from a spouse or family member. So 40% of the 400 richest Americans inherited something that gave them a huge head start. 20% of the list, just over 20% of the 2011 list, 21.25%, inherited sufficient wealth to make the list just by inheriting money. That is a huge portion. But yet Forbes wrote this year that they wanted to assure us that 70% of the list made their fortunes entirely from scratch. So even though 40% of the list inherited a sizable asset from a spouse or family member, Forbes is concluding that 70% of the list made their fortunes entirely from scratch, and that just doesn't seem to make much sense. So we really wanted to point out that many of those on the Forbes 400 list are a part of an exclusive club, whether it be a family dynasty or a very privileged minority of the U.S. who enjoyed some birthright privileges that most people just don't have. Another important observation of the list from 2011 is that family dynasties really persist in this country. 17% of the 2011 Forbes list have family members on the list. So a few recognizable names are the Cargills or the Waltons. And the same thing can be said for the 2012 list.
So, again, I'm speaking with Shannon Moriarty, who's the Communication Director of United for a Fair Economy, and they've just released a report in response to the Forbes 400 list published this week of the 400 richest Americans. Their report is called Born on Third Base. Now, people who are born on home base are, I guess you just mentioned the Waltons and the Cargills. Mm-hmm. Also, there's the Mars candy fortune, Forrest Mars. Again, a zealous advocate of privilege and paying minimal taxes. The other is Bill Marriott, who's, I think, isn't he the biggest donor to the Romney campaign? And Romney used to work for him as well.
Certainly. I mean, I don't know the specifics of each of the members and their political affiliations, other than a few, such as Warren Buffett, who are very out there, you know, with their political affiliations. But certainly, those who inherit this kind of wealth, many of them do a lot to try and keep it in the family. So this has led to the significant weakening of the estate tax, which of course is our nation's most progressive tax on wealth. And, you know, I think it's important to point out that before President Bush, Forbes 400 members paid an average tax rate of 30%. And after Bush was in office, this dropped to 18%. I think one interesting little side note from the report is the Cargill family. When one member of the Cargill family passed away, Mary Janet Morse Cargill died in 2010, of course, when the estate tax was completely repealed, and saved her family $750 million in estate taxes. So certainly, I think the debate about taxes and wealth, and particularly the wealthiest Americans, I think this has some real policy implications that are relevant to today's political discourse.
Well, the so-called death tax, which had been pushed by the Republicans for some time, and they still are pushing it, is such a flagrant example of how our politicians are owned by the wealthy. The proponents of repealing the so-called death tax, the John Boehners and Eric Cantors of the world, always argue about family farms being taken by the government and all this stuff, and there's absolutely no evidence of that. But as you just pointed out, the real point is that the super rich get to save millions and millions, and there's no incentive for them to invest in foundations that provide, you know, some benefit to the community, as has, you know, in the days of old, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundations, et cetera. That's what's inherent in repealing the estate tax, is that they don't have an incentive to give charitably.
Absolutely. And I mean, in my mind, this comes down to two things. We can create a system where we allow these families to perpetuate their dynasties, and we can admire their charitable gifts, which of course, as I said, that is not the focus of this report. There's a lot to be admired about, charity and whatnot. Or, you know, we can continue that way of doing things, or we can create a system where, the Forbes 400 list reflects our country. The reality is, as I mentioned earlier, you and I are less likely now more than ever before to make the Forbes 400 list. As you mentioned in the beginning, the threshold to make the Forbes 400 in 1982, 31 years ago, was 75 million. And today, every single person on the list is a billionaire, and there are probably another 100 or so billionaires who didn't even make the cut. But I think a lot can be learned from the Forbes 400 list by looking at who is not on the list. When you step back and you look at the 400 members, they are mostly older white men. There's only in 2011, and I believe in 2012, the only African American on the list is Oprah. Only 10% of the list are female. The reality is that it has, not every single person in the U.S. has ever had the equal opportunity to build wealth. Yet that's the message that Forbes is trying to spin with their list.
Again, I'm speaking with Shannon Moriarty, who's the Communication Director of United for a Fair Economy, and they have just published in response to the Forbes 400 list that came out this week, a study called Born on Third Base. Walk us through the baseball analogies, if you will, Shannon, in terms of how you've repurposed the 400 list into a kind of baseball analogy.
Sure. So our methodology is very similar to that used by Forbes in determining the assets of each individual. The difference is they start out with a much larger pool and then decide on their top 400. We take their 400 and then do our digging to learn what we can about their background. So what we do is we look at each individual, we determine what their parents did for a living and try to understand what kind of background they came from. Did they grow up in a poor, lower working class family, middle class? What kind of schooling did they have? Was it private school, anything like that? So the way we break it down is our lowest category is the batter's box. So these are individuals who came from a lower or middle class background. And for the 2011 list, we found that 35% of the list was born in the batter's box. A few examples of those people would be Oprah, Larry Ellison, Harold Hamm. The first base is for individuals who had opportunities that gave them some kind of an advantage, such as an upper-class background, inheriting assets of less than $1 million or receiving some startup capital from a family member. We found that 22% of the 2011 list were born on first base. For second base and
by the
third
way, that,
base...
By the way, that includes first base, born on first base includes Mark Zuckerberg, right? And he's the Facebook founder.
That's right.
But his fortune has diminished, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, indeed. And interestingly enough, he's referred to in the narrative for the 2012 list as one of the losers on the list, which I found really interesting that they could consider a billionaire on the Forbes 400 a loser because his assets declined. But I guess that's another story.
Right.
But Mark Zuckerberg was born into a very comfortable, well-educated family and, of course, attended an exclusive prep school, went on to Harvard, and of course, is a white male. So there's no denying there are some advantages that come with that. I will say for second and third base, it's harder to delineate the differences between second and third base. For second base, we say that these are people who inherited a medium-sized business or wealth of more than $1 million or received substantial startup capital. For third base, we included people who inherited wealth in excess of $50 million or a large and prosperous company. I will say that it becomes difficult to determine exactly the value of the assets inherited by people. So it's very likely that many of the people we put on first base in being conservative with our estimates, it's very possible that they could have been on second or third or even home. But again, we wanted to be more conservative with our estimates.
So just to have some of the people that we're talking about on second and third base, you've got Donald Trump, and of course, he's always exaggerated his wealth. It's hard to know. I mean, he clearly wants to keep his day job on television. And the Koch brothers as well, right? They're,
that's right. Yep.
And Marriott and Mars, as we mentioned earlier.
Yes. Yep. These are all people who inherited a company from their parents. Those born on home plate inherited enough wealth to make the Forbes 400 list. And we found that 21.25 of the 2011 list were born on home plate.
And that's like the Waltons, the Cargills, any others that come to mind?
No, the Waltons and the Cargills right there. I mean, you have portion of the list right there. So
I keep repeating this stunning statistic, which I know is starting to sound like a broken record, that the Waltons, the heirs to the Walmart fortune, own the equivalent wealth of 40% of Americans at the lower end of the economic scale. 40% of all Americans have the wealth equivalent to that one family who still clip coupons and who screw their workers to the bone, won't provide them with proper health care. It's an obscenity.
But they give to charity, right?
So, well,
that's the spin that's happening this year. Another really interesting statistic is the Cargill McMillan family members. So, of course, the Cargills, that name doesn't stand out as much as the Waltons, but the Cargill family is the commodities agricultural giant who is one of the largest producers of corn, sugar, beef, and grain. So the prevalence of high fructose corn syrup and pretty much, a huge portion of things in our grocery stores, that all that money flows to the Cargills.
So they're essentially making a fortune out of poisoning America. I mean, some of the most recent studies, particularly on childhood obesity, indicates that the main culprit in the obesity epidemic in this country, and particularly among children, is high fructose corn syrup.
Right, and so this is the Cargill McMillan family, and they do a very deliberate and I would say successful job of keeping their family name and their company affiliation very secret.
It's a private. It's a privately held company, right?
That's right. So they aren't required to disclose any of that information. Right. So Cargill McMillan family members who are inheriting just 1/18th of the family fortune are still inheriting enough wealth to put them on the Forbes 400, which is also pretty staggering, I would say.
So, Shannon Moriarty, how many of these people are isn't the Mars also a private company, no public shares?
I don't have that information, but I think that what you will find is for a lot of these families, these people who are born on home plate tend to be very private about that and tend to do their advocacy, off the radar.
I see. So tell us about some of the new wealthy, these hedge funds people like John Paulson, who are beneficiaries of this new Wall Street-dominated economy, which is referred to as the financialization of the American economy, which is now up to about 50% of the economy, is controlled by Wall Street. And they don't produce things in the old-fashioned way that the Henry Fords and the Thomas Edisons did. They just move money around and play games with computerized programs, et cetera, but yet end up making massive amounts of wealth.
Yeah, well, we found that nearly one quarter of the Forbes list earned their fortunes from financial speculation. And this is, of course, since tax rates on investment income are far lower than those on, income from a paycheck that you get from working a 40-hour week. So our tax system is structured in a way that if you are somebody with a hedge fund who's playing with money all day, you will be allowed to keep a greater portion of it than if you are doing actual labor. So we found that finance on the 2011 list, we found that finance is the largest source of fortunes for members of the list.
So just in closing then, Shannon Moriarty, what's the takeaway from this list? Because we're becoming more aware of this, of not just the divide and the growing disparity in wealth in this country, but following the leak of those secret tapes, the secret taping of Mitt Romney at a hedge fund billionaire's home in Boca Raton back in May, where he exhibited this disdain for 47% of Americans, as suggesting that they're victims who are waiting for government, who depend on government handouts. And now, of course, that's become a part of this presidential race. But I think it indicates an attitude. What you're suggesting here is that the Forbes 400 list is really a celebration of these people. And you're trying to say, wait a minute, what are you trying to say?
We're trying to say that the Forbes 400 list is a calculatedly glamorized tale of the self-made man narrative. It misleads by minimizing the myriad of factors that enable people's wealth. And also, it fails to tell the whole story of wealth in America. And that the real story is that today it is less likely than ever before that the average person who isn't born with privilege will make the list.
And just tell me, what's the URL?
The URL is faireconomy.org, and we also have a petition where we are asking people to pressure Forbes to tell the whole story of wealth in America, so people can visit us at faireconomy.org to sign that. And we also have a deck of Forbes 400 All-Star baseball cards that people can order if they're interested.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Shannon Moriarty.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Shannon Moriarty, who's the Communication Director of United for a Fair Economy, a non-profit public interest organization that raises awareness of how concentrated wealth and power undermines our economy, corrupts democracy, and deepens the racial divide, tearing communities apart. They have just released a report in response to this week's publication of the Forbes 400 list of the richest Americans, the Born on Third Base report. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how Romney's rich supporters see themselves as victims.
Oh, the grocers, though we have fun. Tax collectors getting closer, still we have fun. There's nothing surer. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. In the meantime, in between time, ain't we got fun?